Now babies, so she decides to start taking birth control. Considering Christian folks thought birth control was a sin back then, this is a risky move. But Loretta got married to a dude known as Doolittle and had 4 children before she was even 19. So I'm pretty sure she had some real-life experiences to draw from. She must be honored for her badassery. And last but not least, of course, anything Dolly Parton. The woman is a goddess and hilarious and one of the greatest songwriters of all time. I mean, how can you not be in awe of someone who was born in a dirt floor shack and now has a theme park named after her? One day, I hope to gouge all of you with admission and overpriced turkey legs at Mametown. But until then, I will continue listening to 9 to 5 and Why'd You Come In Here Looking Like That on repeat. Look, at the end of the day, there's always going to be cooler music, more obscure or classic tunes that are more impressive to name drop. But I'm telling you, when you fall in love with some pop country, you fall hard and you don't care who knows it. You will blare those tunes to the eye rolls of other friends or significant others. You will love it and not care what others say, like Trisha Yearwood's protagonist and She's in Love with the Boy. Go forth and get your female country on. I recommend cruising around with all your windows down, singing at the top of your lungs, or singing these after a few glasses of wine at karaoke at your local watering hole. For myself, it's more powerful than therapy, but like a real therapist, not a Scarecrow's era. Sliding into my DMs. People say that we are living in the golden age of television. More and more channels are pumping out artful and cinematic series with boundary-pushing content. Prestige TV, if you will. But sometimes you don't want highbrow art. Sometimes you don't need a Michelin-star meal with foie gras cotton candy. You crave a Hot Pocket. Or even a gas station meal. And the gas station meal of the small screen has got to be reality TV. Personally, I am a sucker for the type of show whose reunion episodes end with crying, screaming, and to be continued flashing across the screen as a stretcher is being rolled out. The shows you can only watch in solitude, and even then, you can tell your dog is judging you as you're reacting to it. For me, at the top of this watch list is none other than Dance Moms. It is the best. For those of you not familiar with this garbage fire of a show, it centers around a dance teacher, Abby Lee Miller, and her dance company of young stars. Every week, the girls learn a new routine to take on the road to various competitions, which happen in exotic locales like a community college's performing arts center in Akron, Ohio. Business opportunity sidebar, if you go to the PDF, I actually have a way for you to create your own dance competition title. Go do it. Create your own. Make $1 million by ripping people off. While putting children and tweens under intense amounts of public scrutiny is the perfect recipe for meltdowns, the girls on the show handle the pressure with grace, even as their stage moms have epic shit fits every episode. How much drama can a low-stakes dance competition with suburban moms really produce? Oh, it gets wild. Every episode includes a backstabbing, screaming spectacles with mothers raising hell because their daughters deserved a solo. Add that to the fact that they clearly always have a few glasses of Pinot Grigio at Panera Bread on their lunch breaks, and a boom. It's a recipe for disaster, and the chef controlling all of it is Abby Lee Miller. Abby is a tornado of teased bangs straight out of Pittsburgh. She's brash, she's terrifying, she's manipulative, and she's fun as fuck to watch. Just when you think her conniving has hit a new low, she takes out a shovel and goes lower. I've watched her scream at mothers and pit young girls against each other. I've seen her choreograph countless dances about death for 10-year-olds, and I've eagerly read every article related to her bankruptcy fraud charges. This story is about the time Abby Lee Miller kept me out of jail. But before we get to that, let's take it back to trace the roots of why dance competitions are so close to my heart. From the time I was 4 years old through high school, you could find me at my local dance studio, tapping and turning and complaining that my feet were bleeding when I eventually went on point. Dance classes taught me discipline, teamwork, and most important, that I had an insatiable hunger for the spotlight. I may as well have been a moth in a tutu, considering how badly I wanted to flutter around the warmth of that light. Dancing was my first foray into being in front of an audience. Dance is also why I have zero modesty, and I am fine dropping trow in front of any other female. Girls throw off their leotards quicker than a New Yorker tosses a mattress during a bedbug outbreak. Here are some top highlights of my years on the scene. 1. Kindergarten recital. On the first shuffle ball change of Jailhouse Rock, I kicked my tiny tap shoe into the audience. 2, junior year. I am Michael Jackson in the Big Company number to Thriller, and I am worshipped by the younger girls who are super scared of the dance. 3, 5 years after graduating and on the studio's 25th anniversary, I am asked to revive said Thriller role and come home to North Carolina 30 pounds heavier after quitting smoking. The little girls were still scared of the dance, but mainly because my out-of-shape ass almost coughs up a lung in the wings. If you go to the PDF, you can see a picture of my sister and I in dance costumes when we were little. This was actually taken in our living room because I had a meltdown the day of picture day because I couldn't find that headpiece. So my dad had to set up a sheet and take pictures for us. Like the Dance Mom girls, I performed as part of a troupe, but luckily for me, Dance with Mitzi was run by the kindest and sweetest lady alive. Mitzi ended her classes early on Wednesday so she could walk across the street and lead the Boonville Methodist Choir. And she once described adding more sequins to a costume to distract the judges from our sloppy routine by saying, "Let's throw some glitter on this chicken shit and pretend it's a rhinestone." Years later, when she came and saw me do a live comedy show in Charlotte and I broke out a split on stage, she stood up and did the Arsenio Hall dog pound arm and screamed, "You go, girl!" The point is, Mitzi is pretty much the opposite of Abby. Yet, as much as Abby was brutal on screen, I was convinced her ruthlessness had to be an act, that there was some amount of putting it on for the camera. No woman would tell a crying child that they need to suck it up and only cry if their arm is hanging off or somebody died, right? This is an actual quote that Abby said on the show. Well, let me tell you, I was about to find out. A few years ago, my friend Grace Helbig was hosting her own show on the E! Network and had been kind enough to ask me to be a guest on it several times. But one day, she gave me the opportunity of a lifetime. "Mames, you have to come on next week," she said with quickened breath, "because my guest is Abby Lee Miller." The concept for the segment was that Grace and I would interview Abby and then perform a quick, ridiculous dance for her. She would then decide who, out of the two of us, would make it onto the ALDC, the Abby Lee Dance Company Elite Team. On the day of the taping, Grace and I were insanely nervous. I mean, what if she yelled at us or didn't understand our humor? Before we could imagine all of our worst-case scenarios, homegirl came in barefoot and braless like she just escaped a fire. When the producers told her that her dressing room was down a flight of stairs, Abby wasn't having it. She changed right then and there in the set kitchen, whipping off her caftan faster than a golden girl on spring break. In fact, she was in the middle of putting a shirt back on when Grace and I approached her to introduce ourselves. Grace, being the host, led the conversation. "Hi, Abby. We're big fans, and which earring should I wear?" Abby said, cutting off Grace mid-gush. She was holding both a massive silver star and a massive dangly rhinestone earring over each lobe. Definitely the star, because you are one," I responded, grossed out by myself. "Hi, I'm Mamrie." Saying the woman gave zero fucks is an understatement, but there was no time to attempt another intro. Before we knew it, we were mic'd up and sitting on a tiny couch, Abby firmly planted in between us. "You need to raise the camera," she said, directing the professional cameraman whose living is based on knowing how to shoot a camera. "See, if you shoot from a higher angle, your face looks thinner," she said, as Grace and I acted impressed, as if Grace and I don't each take 400 selfies a day and haven't been editing our own faces for years. We made small talk, kissed her ass, as best we could while the crew continued setting up. I have no clue what came out of our mouths, but clearly Abby could tell we were fangirling, and so she blessed us with some DM dirt, going off about certain moms and dancers. She was 1 second away from telling us what she really thinks of Kendall's music when she stopped dead in her tracks. "Is that a two-way mirror?" At first, we didn't respond. "Is that a two-way mirror?" Abby asked with heightened alarm, pointing at a mirror above the fireplace. "No, just a regular mirror," Grace assured her as we cut eyes to each other. For a woman who talks a lot of shit, she sure was paranoid. Her eyes look crazier than they do when Nia falls out of a turn or when Kendall is a beat behind every trio she's ever done. "Are you sure that's not a two-way mirror that producers watch from behind?" I half expected her to get up and pound her fist on the glass like an enraged convict being questioned on Law and Order. "No," Grace said, her brown eyes as big as Cinnabon's. "I'm pretty sure behind that is just a wall, and then behind that is a hallway." Good, because I do not need the producers hearing what I say. Grace and I shot each other another look. Here this woman was bossing around the crew like she was Scorsese, but didn't realize that we were mic'd, And everything we said was being directly pumped into the headphones of every producer and agent sitting around the monitor. The actual director said, action, and Grace immediately snapped into host mode. She conducted the interview like a pro, very Diane Sawyer meets Pee Wee Herman. Meanwhile, I am nervous. Grace and I had choreographed a 30-second routine to an obviously royalty-free song, just like they do on Dance Moms. If you want to see a picture of this total shit show, there is Grace and I with wooden emojis in front of our face as Abby looks like she's in hell. Oh, what? I didn't mention my favorite thing about the show, which is how all the dances they perform have to be done to royalty-free music because the budget is so low. It is the best! For instance, they did a commemorative dance in honor of Prince's passing, but since they obviously couldn't get the rights to Purple Rain, they danced to a sound-alike entitled, no lie, Purple Pride by Evan Olsen. This was no Prince, more like Pauper. We finished our routine and waited to hear who she thought would win. Y'all, after years of showing up to the dance studio for hours every week, torturing my feet in those point shoes, forgoing weekend keggers to attend dance competitions, all that hard work became worth it when I heard Abby say those three magical words. Mamrie is decent. It was like a son pining for his father's affection and finally getting an I love you from Dad's deathbed. I was satisfied. A few months later, I was home between some of my international jaunts. Not much had changed, except that I was off the air mattress, woo, and in a real bed now. My mornings were spent nursing red wine hangovers and taking out the dried contact lenses that I fell asleep in after my usual late-night dance party in front of beans. This particular morning was especially tough because I had to go to a promo shoot. In a few weeks, I was set to host the Shorty Awards in New York City. If you've never heard of them, congrats! You are the majority. The Shorty Awards are basically the Oscars of social media, and I was going to be their Billy Crystal. We were shooting a funny intro to the show, which combines my two favorite things, dance moms and dogs. The concept behind the video being that I am the Abby Lee Miller of pups, turning average pets into Insta celebs. In the spirit of everyone's favorite Pittsburgh dance star, I had my makeup laid on thick and my hair teased to the heavens. Seriously, there was enough hairspray lacquered on my head to deflect a bullet. I spent the next few hours corralling commoner dogs and yelling at their owners for their lack of Instagram presence and unimaginative captions. Guys, y'all have not lived until you've looked a tiny French bulldog in the face and made fun of him for not being able to breed naturally. It felt so evil. It felt so Abby. Once the shoot was over and I was done individually apologizing to each of the pups, I headed to my ex's to drop off beans and pick up the last of my stuff from the house. It was quite the haul. The backseat alone had 5 garbage bags of clothes, not to mention trinkets, books, toiletries, the whole shebang. And don't get me started on that trunk, which was packed full of random shit I was saving for future videos. While I was driving, I couldn't help but notice people were checking me out. Every light I stopped at, people in the crosswalks were giving me the eyes. I was serving young, skinny, Abby Lee realness. It didn't hurt that I was also in a major bodysuit phase and rocking a white turtleneck a la Claudia Schiffer during the Fashion Cafe days. I looked good, and I knew it, nodding as passerbys checked me out. I wasn't even considering the fact that they could have been staring because they wondered why this woman, who was a clearly homeless hoarder living out of her car, would splurge on professional hair and makeup. I was en route to Jocelyn's to decompress over some wine when at the busiest intersection in the hippest neighborhood in L.A., I heard it. The whoop whoop of a cop car. I looked in my rear view and sure enough, there was a cop with his blue lights behind me. I immediately broke into a cold sweat. Did I have a gun in the car? Did I have a condom filled with heroin up my ass? No matter that I don't even own a gun, and there's no way I could fit that up my butt, but these are the things that run through my head when I'm around any type of law enforcement. All the people I thought were checking me out before were really checking me out as 2 LAPD officers surrounded my car, one at each front seat window. I was simultaneously mortified and terrified. I rolled down both windows and looked to the officer on my left. Ma'am, are you aware that your registration is 6 months expired? Fuck! I had totally forgotten. My registration had expired in October, then I filmed a movie, went to Australia, traveled for a month, then broke up with my boyfriend, then traveled more. I hadn't been driving consistently in 6 months. Also, I had never gotten my own car registered. To me, that was just one of those boring tasks that my boyfriend took care of, and I just assumed it happened on its own, like the garbage being taken out or the romance remaining intact despite not putting any effort in. I am so sorry, officer, I said, fighting back real tears. I haven't really been in the country the last few months, and it completely skipped my mind. Let me see your license. Let it be known that I'm one of those idiot people who refuses to carry a wallet. I stick my ID and cards in the back pocket of whatever pants I'm wearing. It's a great way to avoid carrying a purse, and also a fun way to induce a panic attack every time you think you lost your ID, which is weekly-ish for me. I began frantically looking through my things. I know it's in here somewhere. I looked back at the driver's side officer, who was having none of it. Sorry, I'm a little unorganized because I'm going through a major breakup, and my stuff is everywhere, and, ma'am, do you have your license or not? He asked sternly. I swallowed hard and turned to him with eyes sadder than a geriatric basset hound. I don't think I have it. I could feel a lump start to form in my throat, like I'd swallowed a softball. I did not want to cry. Hordes of hipsters were walking by, and I felt pathetic. I'll be right back, he said, walking to the cop car. I looked in my mirror, wiping away the tears that had fallen. You're going to be fine, I heard, just then noticing the other cop was still there. I had forgotten about him completely, but was relieved to see his friendly eyes and Eric Estrada smile. I smiled back. Sorry, I feel like a mess. I'm going through a breakup, and my boyfriend usually takes care of these things, and I moved out, so my stuff is everywhere, and this isn't normally how I look, and... Hold on a second, he said, cutting me off. Look in your rear view. I looked in the reflection, expecting to see bad cop coming back with handcuffs or a German Shepherd. The only thing that could be more embarrassing than getting drug searched in the middle of Sunset Boulevard was them making me open my trunk to reveal a Girl Talk board game, a Dream Phone board game, Mall Madness board game, novelty-sized martini and margarita glass, blender, box of copies of my first book, pinata that looked like a giant eyeball, a family-sized bottle of Advil spilled everywhere, a fake E.T. hand, and a replica of Michael Jackson's jacket from Beat It. You might think that I'm exaggerating, but this was exactly what I had back there. Popping my trunk would have been a Pandora's box of questions, and no doubt jealousy, because hot damn, those are some enviable board games. What? What am I looking for? I asked him. No, look at you in the mirror. You're telling me that gorgeous woman is single? I leaned back in my seat. Was this cop actually hitting on me? You aren't going to be single for long. You're friggin' gorgeous, he continued. Oh, my God. Chips had a thing for teased hair and Abby Lee makeup. He was digging this look. Let me see what I can do with my partner here. He's a real tight ass. Apparently, he wasn't the only tight ass, I thought, as I watched him walk back to his car. I tossed my hair in the mirror. Was I into this? This was the kind of scenario you only see in movies, specifically of the porn variety. After what felt like forever, Chips was back. Okay, beautiful, here's the deal. You've got to get your registration up to date. Normally, your car would be impounded for this. Yeah, I'd like you to impound this, I thought, but thank God did not actually say out loud. Also, I told my partner that you found your license, or else that'd be a $500 ticket. So just write down some numbers, and you'll just have a $15 ticket. He handed me a form. Wait, I was confused. I just write down a fake license number? He nodded. If it's not my real number, will this ticket even count? He smiled. Damn, he really did look like Eric Estrada. I wrote down some numbers frantically and handed it back to him. He handed me another paper. What's this? I asked. It was just a blank paper. Oh, that's for you to write down your phone number. My jaw dropped. Guys, in retrospect, I am aware of how much an abuse of power this was. Like, what? I refuse to write down my number and then he gives me a real ticket or impounds my car? I couldn't say no, but I also didn't want to. He was real cute, and I was real sad and lonely. I'm Marco, by the way, he said, holding out his hand. I resisted the urge to tell Marco that I liked his polo and kept it cool. Mamrie, I said, shaking his hand and handing him my number. Our beginning of a porn moment was interrupted when Bad Cop appeared at my driver's side. Miss Hart, here's your warning, he said, handing me the $15 ticket. Please go get your registration sorted out. Then take care of this ticket. I will, officer. I swear I'm not normally like this. Bad Cop walked off as Marco leaned in. I'll call you, he said, then walked away. I was stunned. Was it wrong of me to have gone along with Marco's obvious power move just to get out of a ticket? Was I a bad feminist? Was it wrong of me to have allowed my giant teased hair and heavy 90s makeup to subvert the law? Furthermore, if this book garnered such attention, why wasn't I dressing like this all the time? I decided to table my head full of questions for a moment, mainly because there were several cars laying on their horns, and instead just tried to sit with the emotion of gratitude. If I had been done up like my normal self, I think I would have lost my car that day. But instead, I drove off with a fake ticket and a new cop boyfriend. So in conclusion, I have to give credit to Abby Lee. While I knock her style on the regular, it really goes over well for a certain audience. And you can take a peek at exactly how done up I was in the attached photo. This was literally seconds after I'd been given the ticket. Before I started driving off, I knew I had to document this moment. Unfortunately, that audience is full of shit. Turns out, Marco never called, and the ticket did count. However, I didn't know that because I hadn't had my mail forwarded yet. I found out only when I was on vacation in Hawaii while writing this book, and I got a voicemail from a collections agency saying my license had been revoked for failing to pay the ticket for 6 months and not showing up to court. Luckily, even though I had to pay a fucking ridiculous fine, I wasn't taken to jail. Abby, on the other hand, is currently serving 366 days behind bars for that bankruptcy fraud charge, which is the only reason I have the balls to tell that story from Grace's show. Give him hell in there, Abby. Also, please don't come for me when you get out. I have a gun and a butt full of heroin, and I'm not afraid to use them. Pros and cons. It was a few months into singledom, and wouldn't you know it, I got invited to do another convention. Yes, another one. Even I knew it was excessive. At any point, I expected my friends to perform a convention intervention, reading me letters about how much they love me and need me to stop talking about myself on panels. But I didn't care. I was still very much into keeping myself distracted, and my house was still 90% empty, so when San Jose asked me to come to their first ever Comic-Con, I quickly accepted. They had decided to have a panel about YouTube, which felt like a weird one in the world of cosplays and nerd culture. Would I walk in and feel like a dweeb entering a football locker room? Or a quarterback walking into a game of Dungeons and Dragons? I had no clue. All I knew is that they were flying me there and putting me up for 2 nights, and I never say no to an opportunity to drink from a minibar in a hotel bed. When I got to my hotel in San Jose, I was told I couldn't check into my room yet. Shocker. Part of me thinks that telling a customer that their room is being cleaned but should be ready in an hour is all a plot to drum up more business for the lobby bar. And guess what? I fall for it every damn time. The concierge hadn't even set down his walkie-talkie that he was using to page housekeeping for an ETA before I had saddled up to the bar. It was your classic hotel bar, one that hadn't figured out its identity yet. The type of bar where the top half of the menu is edamame and cucumber martinis, but the table tent's advertising $3 Jaeger shots and a buffalo wing special. It was there, sake tumi teeny in hand, that I discovered my new favorite activity. Sitting by the window of a bar near the convention center during Comic-Con. Honestly, it's like sitting front row center to a parade. Some might argue it wouldn't be entertaining if you, like me, know only about 1% of the characters that people are dressed up as. But that's what made it so much fun. It was basically like being planted in front of a brand new universe. Or what I imagine Tokyo is like. Just a never-ending carousel of one insane look after the next. For about 3 hours, I sat there, drinking up this alien spectacle. Turns out there's only a certain number of niche characters from Sailor Moon and Silent Hill you can watch walk past before you get desensitized. So, with my belly feeling like a boozy boba tea, a couple of martinis and a handful of edamame thrown in, I decided to venture out into day one of this convention. People were buzzing everywhere, all moving together toward the convention center in intricate costumes. It was so packed that you had to time yourself to join the foot traffic, like someone waiting to find the right moment to hop into the swinging ropes of Double Dutch. I kept my head down so as to not be recognized before realizing that no one gave a shit. Nary a single double take. Oh, right, I thought. This isn't an internet convention where everyone knows everyone on YouTube. Literally no one here knows who you are. It was the first time I'd been able to walk around a con without being stopped by anyone. It was like I was wearing Harry Potter's invisibility cloak, which is about as nerdy a reference as you'll get from me. Normally at a convention, I'd have to go through back doors and service elevators, hopping into town cars and being dropped off at service entrances to avoid the madness. But that wasn't the case here. I could bob and weave among the attendees totally unnoticed because who the fuck cares about a medium-tier YouTuber when there is a reunion of the cast of Back to the Future happening? After swimming upstream with the masses for a while, avoiding sharp and potentially dangerous costumes became tiresome for Two Martini Mamrie, I dipped out, taking solace on a creature-free sidewalk a few blocks away. I stopped dead in my tracks as a group of young girls with slicked back buns, sequined outfits, and faces loaded with makeup ran past me to cross the street. Those aren't comic book characters, I thought to myself, a smile spreading across my face. Those are... And then I looked up to see a theater across the street from me, shining like a beacon in the sun. A banner was draped across the front proclaiming, Star Power Dance Competition, March 18th through 20th. Was this a mirage? I had no choice. I had to go in. I don't think I even moved my legs. I just levitated and floated into the performance hall the way you see abductees being lifted into a UFO. I didn't get two steps into the lobby before I was hit with that familiar scent of stale venue, plus hairspray, plus new leather ballet slippers. It was pure nostril nostalgia. Or nostralgia, trademark pending. In a sea of sci-fi, I had sniffed out my people. The lobby was packed with girls bustling about, practicing routines, merch tables selling pink tutus and purple boas, and parents scrambling to buy their kids whatever tiny duffel bag they wanted so as not to upset their angels on the day of the show. I pushed through the lobby and continued to the carpeted hallway. Nervous groups of girls practiced their routines and sped up eight counts, marking the steps. I saw one girl bossing around her teammates, clearly from nerves, to go over it one more time. Oh, the memories! I was that girl! The nervous Nellie who would want to go over the routine 900 times before going out. I peeled myself away from staring at strangers' children and pushed through the double doors of the theater. It was dead silent. Until a loud voice boomed through the speakers, contestant 257, we have Abigail with Baby Love. A light clapping trickled through the audience, and then the lights came up with a girl in head-to-toe sequence in a perfect starting pose, ready to impress those judges. I looked around, knowing exactly what I'd see. A few dozen parents scattered throughout the crowd, not paying attention until their kid hit the stage. Yes, I thought to myself. I had found my Mecca on the illustrious solo day. I very easily found a seat away from any of the parents so they would not be tipped off that a rando woman had stumbled in from Comic-Con. I looked around the room, locking eyes for a second with a mom with a severe bob and an even more severe stare. Anxiety coursed through me until I realized I had nothing to worry about. For all they knew, I was just a non-social mom whose daughter was performing that day and who just happened to smell faintly of vodka. How dare they judge me? They don't know how hard it is to raise little Maggie all by myself, I thought. Lord knows her deadbeat father doesn't do anything but watch CSI Miami and drink Bud Heavy. Yes, this inner monologue might have been the paranoid ramblings of a buzzed woman, but at least I had my alibi prepared if confronted by a parent. For the next hour, I sat in the dark theater in complete bliss. I didn't want to forget any detail, but I also couldn't videotape it, seeing as that would be creepy. But I did, however, take some notes on my phone to remember the spectacle. Siri, acting as my stenographer, as I quietly dictated to her without having to take my eyes off the action. Hell, if the parents in the audience didn't at least spy that I was a mom, maybe they thought I was some weird talent scout looking for the next Maddie Ziegler. Here are my notes. We are clearly on solo day. There's a tiny chubby girl with massive blonde curls doing a dance to that 50s song, Stupid Cupid. Very confusing song. She says she's carrying his books at school, but describes his lips as wine. Is this about underage drinking? Holy shit. This next solo has a prop, and it's a giant high heel. I repeat, a giant high heel has been wheeled out to the stage. She's doing a dance called Call Me Princess. Get the fuck out of here. I just looked down at my phone for 1 second, and there's a different high heel on stage. This number is called It's All About Me. This one is leopard print. Both pigtails are clip-ins. The next soloist is named Chloe, and just in case the judges forget her name, a giant mirror with Chloe painted down the side has been rolled onto the stage. Sassy. Is this a prop category? Why are there so many props? The trophy should be handed to the dads for making these things and wheeling them on stage. Three Chinese cuties doing a dance called the Lotus Fairies to some plucked Chinese harp. While all these other girls are sassy and vain, this is just a straight-up traditional dance. It's so pure. Oh, when the lotuses bowed, another song accidentally started. It's Nicki Minaj's Anaconda, and those poor sweet girls are still slowly walking off stage, smiling at the judges. Boy toy named Troy used to live in Detroit. Big dope dealer money played them off. I couldn't handle it anymore. I was the only one laughing, and I was straight up wheezing. I busted back through those double doors and got the hell out of there. Severe Bob shooting me a look as I ran out. I took my invisible self back through the crowd before finally tucking into bed with my tiny Tito's and sodas. The next day, I headed to the Chaotic Convention Center and met my fellow panelists, one of them being Alex James, spelled A-L-X. I shook his hand, and before I could ask him if his mother was allergic to vowels, I got the question that no one wants to hear. "You don't remember me, do you?" he said with deadened eyes. I was mortified. We've met before, at Scott and Mitch's house. Still, nothing. I was about 40 pounds heavier, had a beard, and since then I've gotten a nose job. Motherfucker, what? You can't blame someone for not recognizing you when you've had a makeover like you were on the short-lived reality show The Swan? While his calling me out was ridiculous, I appreciated his lack of fucks given and decided, I like this Alex guy. So as soon as the panel was over, I asked him if he wanted to grab lunch. He agreed, despite having recently taken up smoking to curb his appetite. We sat there eating our lunch, drinking, and getting to know each other. We talked about YouTube over apps and our mutual love of dogs over entrees before realizing our biggest commonality over another drink. We were both utterly obsessed with Dance Moms. "Wait, you love Dance Moms too?" he nodded. "I watch it religiously. It is my religion. I want a crucifix necklace with Abby on the cross." "I know," he said, pushing his food around the plate. "And can you believe that Maddie is leaving after this season? See, you better keep that wig on to protect her identity because Abby is going to get out of jail and come for her." "This is going to sound weird," I said, as his eyes lit up like he'd just been gifted a fresh carton of Marlboro Lights. "I like weird. I love weird. What is it?" he asked. "Would you have any interest in going back to the hotel, making to-go cocktails, then attending day two of the San Jose Star Power Dance Competition?" If you had looked hard enough, you can almost see the wrinkles in his forehead spelling out duh in cursive. And this is obviously hyperbole. Of course, Alex James doesn't have any forehead wrinkles. "Check, please," he said, motioning to the waiter. We ran back to the hotel and through the throngs of costume crowds, once again rocking that invisibility cloak of anonymity because no one gave a shit about these YouTube dorks. Within a half hour, we made it into that dark auditorium, coffee cups full of vodka soda. We were in heaven. We clapped hard for the girls who gave a standout effort. Quietly critiqued them when they could have done better. Tried not to audibly gasp when one girl clearly fell out of a triple pirouette and just did a double. After about an hour, the lights came on. "There will be a 10-minute break for our judges, and when we return, we will start our jazz trios." "Trios!" we said in unison with the joy of a child hearing the ice cream truck. "You know one of them is just going to fuck it up and bring down the points." "Oh, I know. Just keep it a duet. No one needs a Kendall thrown on top to mess up the rhythm of the fuetes. Speaking of, you know, some of the Dance Mom girls follow me on social media," he said. "Really?" I asked, trying to squeeze one last sip out of that to-go cup. "Yeah, they love YouTube. I bet they follow you, too." I looked around the room to notice a few girls staring, some whispering into each other's ears. All of a sudden, it felt like that moment in Toy Story when Buzz Lightyear gets stuck in the claw machine at Pizza Planet and all the aliens turn their eyes on him. Or in the 1991 movie Sleeping with the Enemy when Julia Roberts realizes her husband is indeed the enemy. Everything came into focus. "We've been spotted," I said. It was like our invisibility cloaks had just been ripped off and we were standing there fully exposed. I grabbed his hand. "Don't make any sudden movements," I said. We slowly stood up and backed out of that auditorium as if we were face to face with a pack of mountain lions. Once we made it past the sign-in desk, we busted into a full-on sprint back to the hotel. We slipped into the crowded lobby elevator just as it was closing, pushed up against a couple of people in full special effects makeup and masks and ridiculously huge fake weapons, a ninja, and a nightmare-esque Harajuku nurse. We were safe. I mean, safe enough, considering I was currently standing beside a guy in a metal mask holding a flail above me. Just a casual medieval ball covered in spikes dangling over my head. No big deal. That was close, Alex said, trying to catch his breath. I know. Could you imagine? The rest of the elevator remained silent, but I didn't care if they could hear us. We had our invisibility cloaks back on. Like, what if someone asked us what we were doing there? Oh, you know, just being two sketchy adults watching other people's children dance in spandex with coffee cups full of vodka. The doors opened to the third floor and Alex stepped out. So fun hanging, he said before the door closed. Let me know when you want to go spy on children again. And next time, don't act like we're meeting for the first time, bitch. The doors closed, and I was left alone with the Comic-Conners. The only thing more quintessentially awkward than being in an elevator with strangers as music faintly plays is being in one that's completely silent. Ding! The doors opened, and I stepped off by myself, happy to be away from the mayhem of it all. Excuse me, Mamrie? I turned around, expecting to find that I dropped my room key, but wait a sec. How did they know my name? Then old Spiky Ball asked from behind his sheet metal mask, can we take a picture? I'm a big fan. I won't tell anyone about the kids. And that moment, in an elevator full of what looked like the first round of rejects from a GWAR audition, I knew I was the biggest freak of all. A convention pro who's anything but conventional. And you can go look at a picture from that moment because, of course, after old Spiky Ball wanted a selfie, I had to grab one too. Backstreet's Whack, all right. There's nothing better in life than a good documentary. I love a rock doc, a bio doc, an underdog doc, a doc about docs, doctors, Doc Holiday, you name it. I will find any excuse to go to a film festival and spend the days watching documentaries. Film festivals are my happy place. You watch movies all day, go to a delicious dinner, schmooze at a party with an open bar, wake up hungover only to grab a massive coffee with Bailey's, sit your ass back in a dark theater all day long, get dinner, then go back out to parties and do it all again. It's like the plot of Groundhog Day, but with more swag lounges and less Andy McDowell's. Well, depending on the festival. But sometimes I want to get my documentary on in a more relaxed setting, as in I'm going to watch one at home without a Q&A with the director, like a damn peasant. But that's where my friend and fellow documentary enthusiast Jocelyn comes in. Every few weeks, Joss and I will text each other to see what veggies we have lying around in the fridge and then figure out what we can cook up for dinner. We call these inventory meals. It helps clean out the fridge, and Lord knows I'm a fan of anything that resembles a cooking competition. Here's an example of this menu-building challenge. Joss. Woman, I got quinoa, a couple of sweet potatoes, a shit ton of cilantro and citrus, and an onion. What you got? Me. Sick. I got a can of black beans, some baked tofu, radishes, and tomatoes. Let's make cilantro, lime, quinoa, Mexican veggie, and tofu bowls. And I'll quick pickle the radishes for some added crunch and acidity on top. Joss. Fuck yes. See you at 7. This is adult female friendship in a nutshell. We cook and drink and settle in front of the TV with a bowl of yumminess, a big glass of sparkling rosé, and a doc on deck. This particular evening, we were extra excited about the night's viewing. The subject of the doc wasn't a pressing social issue or the life of some niche artist. Nay, this documentary was about none other than the Backstreet Boys. Let me just say out of the gate that back in high school, I liked my boy bands the same way I like my and my girlfriend's menstrual cycles. In sync. Sure, Timberlake's ramen noodle curls looked like he was one bouillon packet short of a college dorm room feast, but that didn't matter to my 15-year-old self. And don't get me started on the Bye 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 video. Seriously, that little smile he gives when he jumps off the ledge and lands on his feet like some sexy cat fully made sophomore me tingle in my boy cut undies. But guys, Backstreet Boys Show 'Em What You're Made Of is a game changer. In 1 hour and 40 minutes, I went from like to love with these dudes. Their band name did not hold up because they were boys no more. Mm-mm. They put the men in documentary, especially Kevin. Oh my God, he's like the band dad. I love him, Jocelyn said between forkfuls of tofu. You can tell how much they really care for each other, I said, refilling our glasses. I just want them to be happy, especially Kevin. When the final credit passed the screen, we were cheering. I was officially in love with the Backstreet Boys, 10 years too late. It's like when I fell in love with Paul Newman in fifth grade after watching What a Way to Go, before realizing he was an old man by then. Crushing. To this day, it's still hard for me to walk through the salad dressing aisle without old feelings resurfacing. I rolled home from Jocelyn's that night with a Tupperware of leftovers and an airtight crush on the BSB. I laid in bed reading a very thick, smart person book. I'm kidding, I was just farting. But I couldn't get the doc out of my mind. I needed to know more about my newfound crushes. So I took to my laptop to give the guys a quick Google. Maybe there'd be pics of them getting together for a fun weekend or doing something adorable like having a picnic complete with three-legged races. I bet AJ would make a joke about how he doesn't need a partner because he already has a third leg. As in his dong, I thought, delighted in this completely made-up scenario I was creating for my own pleasure. I clicked on that Google search, and what popped up changed me forever. Backstreet Boys, Mediterranean Cruise, 2016? What in Kenny Kev's name is this? I researched further. Apparently, for 5 years running, the boys had done a special cruise through the Caribbean with their superfans, each night putting on different performances and theme parties. This year, however, they were taking their maiden voyage across the Atlantic for a trip leaving from Barcelona and docking in Cannes and Italy before returning to the City of Lisps. I immediately called Jocelyn to share this news, which, if you are friends with me, you know means serious business. If I was being kidnapped by a drug cartel and had a moment to call the cops, I'd probably just text 911, "Ack! Toad's being kidnapped! SOS! ASAP! TTYL!" out of convenience. She answered, "Joss, you're not going to believe this, but in 2 months, the Backstreet Boys are doing a I'm already pricing out flights!" she yelled, cutting me off. "It says here there's a party with the boys every night on the main deck. Holy shit! We could party with Kenny Kev!" I screamed. "And on the last night, they give an acoustic concert in the main hall? BSB unplugged," she shrieked, with the sound of her laptop keys tapping feverishly in the background. It was settled. In T-minus 2 months, we would be on a giant boat with 2,000 BSB mega fans setting sail from Barcelona. Sure, we were going to have fun, but we were also going on a mission. Come hell or high water, Jocelyn and I were going to meet and get a picture with Kevin. Before I knew it, I landed in Barcelona. It felt extremely surreal as I stood in the aisle waiting to deplane. What kind of idiots travel halfway around the globe to go on a cruise with a boy band? Before I could further ponder whether this was a huge and costly mistake, I was snapped out of it by a thick Pennsylvania accent. "Howie's gonna remember you. Quit being an idiot, Chrissy." I looked back and saw exactly what kind of other idiots would travel for this cruise. Behind me stood a mother-daughter duo, both rocking matching Steelers hoodies and speaking at a volume usually saved for Heinz Field. And yes, obviously I had to Google the name of that stadium that the Steelers play in. Also, spoiler alert, it's not shaped like a giant ketchup bottle. The poor guy who'd been sitting beside them was staring at the exit like a dog with cheese on its nose, just waiting for the signal to go for it. I made it through customs, got my bags, and found the nearest coffee shop to fuel up and wait for Joss. I hadn't had one sip of my latte before the two Steelers grabbed a table beside me. The daughter, who I guessed was in her late 20s, was still yammering about whether Howie would remember her from the past 4 cruises they'd been on, as the mom literally plucked her chin hairs. I'm not talking about a quick, "Oh no, my pesky chin hair is back, better pluck it real fast." I mean a full 30-minute session of chin hair plucking in the middle of a cafe in front of dozens of people. If this was any indication of the type of ship people we were going to be with, it was going to be a long 5 days. After trying to block out Mama Steelers, collecting enough chin hairs to fashion herself a Howie D. voodoo doll, I couldn't have been happier to spot Jocelyn coming out of customs. I grabbed her and changed her direction, shielding her from the horror that I had just witnessed. One of us needed to be unscathed. That night, we popped from one tiny tapas bar to the next. In one particularly adorable one, with our tables covered in cocktails and papas bravas, we started to mentally prepare for the cruise. Up until this point, it had been a whirlwind idea that seemed ridiculous. But we were here, damn it, and fewer than 12 hours from boarding the ship show. "I have no idea what to expect," Jocelyn said, taking a long swallow of her Negroni. "Well, based on the folks on my flight, it's going to be a doozy." "Oh, I know. We should check the hashtag on Instagram. It's got to be #BackstreetCruise or Hashtag BSB Cruise 2016, something like that. We asked the bartender for the Wi-Fi password and tried to connect. It was slower than a snail on Quaaludes, but eventually we were on, and OMG was it a goddamn goldmine. People had been using the hashtag for months in anticipation of the cruise. We were straight up posers compared to these diehard fans. We went in hard on those tags. I'm talking a deep dive of Instagram history. There were fans who'd been on every BSB cruise since its inception. Fans that were meeting other fans that they had befriended from across the globe. Fans who were coming halfway across the globe solo? We picked out our three favorites and gave them nicknames. One, Kevin's Angel. This woman was sporting a perfect tat of our beloved Kevin's face on her left bicep, and none other than Buffy the Vampire Slayer's main squeeze, Angel, a.k.a. David Boreanaz, on her other arm. Number two, Nick's chick. This curly blonde cutie couldn't be more obsessed with the baby of BSB. She had photos from upward of 30 meet and greets on her profile, spanning back through multiple Nick hairdos. This one threw us off because the girl looked like a beauty queen. Tan, fit, bright smile. But despite being able to probably get any guy she wanted, this hottie couldn't be harder for Carter. Number three, Mysterious. This fan didn't show favoritism toward any one of the guys in her Instagram feed. She did, however, demonstrate a huge love of face-altering phone apps. I'm not talking about the ones that smooth out your crow's feet or plump up your lips a little. I mean the ones that give you full fake eyes and hair a la Toddlers and Tiaras. Every single photo used these filters, so it was virtually impossible to know what she actually looked like, besides having a distinctive labret piercing. To give you an idea of how doctored her photos were, I included a picture, and this is what I would look like after using that app. It was horrifying. We boarded the cruise the next day, ready for the adventure ahead. As we made our way down the narrow halls to our room, the scene felt familiar. Pairs of girls were standing outside their doors, decorating them with printed out photos, construction paper, streamers, the whole Michael's Craft Store motherload. Oh my God, I said to Jocelyn as I stopped in front of a door covered in a world map with a tiny glued-on airplane showing a flight path from Florida. This is just like the first week of college when girls rush sororities. All down the hallway, girls were bustling about, decorating, singing, talking. This was a Backstreet Boys sorority semester at sea. After dropping our stuff off in our matchbox-sized room, we headed straight to the bar, passing the pool deck along the way. Now, here's where the whole idea of a cruise is messed up. When you think cruise, you probably think of tropical weather. Neon, bikini-clad girls dancing to Rump Shaker, all the top visuals from MTV's The Grind. This was not going to happen here. It was fucking freezing. I don't know why I didn't put together that maybe the Mediterranean wouldn't be the warmest place in May. I just assume you go on a cruise and it's tanning time. Not here. If you went out in a swimsuit for more than 20 minutes, you would look like you were doing some Laura Palmer cosplay. But the strong gusts of wind and constant misting of rain and ocean water were no reason not to drink like we were on spring break. We headed to the bar in the ship's Mexican restaurant. Ooh, this jalapeno margarita sounds good, I said, passing the table tent menu to Jocelyn. Make that two of them, she said to the unamused bartender. I turned to Joss, but before I could dive into my idea for how to find Kevin, I was stricken with shock at our bartender's technique for making margaritas. Guys, as a former bartender myself, there are few things as horrifying as when you see someone pick up one of those dehydrated bottles of sour mix. Use fresh juice, for God's sakes. Do you see a parrot on my shoulder? These aren't the pirate days, but I still don't want scurvy. But I tried to block it out to not be a bartending snob. That is, until homeboy dropped the drinks in front of us. I looked at that glass like I was just given my Fear Factor challenge when I realized that these spicy margaritas were made with pickled jalapenos. Insert Wilhelm scream here. The only time a pickled jalapeno should be in a drink is when you eat your taco directly over it and that shit falls in. Joss could see I was horrified, but at least we were horrified together. Cheers to Kevy Kev and possibly the weirdest 5 days of our lives, she said, before we clinked our glasses and took a mouthful of vinegar. How are they? The bartender asked monotonously. Amazing, I said, with a face that can only be described as those YouTube videos where a baby tries a lemon for the first time. Nothing like a margarita that tastes like sour syrup and quesadilla. We took them to the face, then had a few safe vodka and sodas before hearing the music start up on the pool deck. Each night brought a different theme party, the first one being Bon Voyage. Supposedly, people dressed up for the parties, but we were doubtful. Here's for tonight, Jocelyn said, handing me a sailor hat. I also brought feather boas for Casino Royale night, tiny Oscars for A Night at the Cinema, and lace gloves and masks for 50 Shades of Backstreet, the closing party. Good Lord, Joss was a peach. She knows I love a good theme, but I'd been too distracted to pack correctly. But with my life imploding and my living out of my car slash suitcase and constantly traveling and whatnot, do you think people will really dress up, I said, downing the last of my drink. I hate when people half-ass a theme party. When we walked out on the pool deck, my question was answered. Everyone was in costume. Barely. And by that I mean, holy slutty Halloween, Batman! The deck was filled with booty shorts popping, tits-up sexy sailors. It was as if booking the cruise came with a 50% off coupon to that section of Party City, and Jocelyn and I were the only two who didn't get the memo. These girls were going hard for the boys' attention. We started to make our way through the sea of sea women, but we were stopped in our tracks as soon as we heard the first measure of that first BSB single, We've Got It Going On, come from the damn speaker. Those sailors screamed and rushed the tiny stage so fast you would have thought it was a mutiny. One by one, the boys appeared on stage, each rocking a crisp ship captain's uniform, with Kevin bringing up the rear. Kevy Kev! Joss and I screamed in unison, clutching each other out of excitement, but also because the wind was smacking us around. On stage, Howie grabbed the mic and started speaking to the crowd. I think they welcomed everyone to the ship, but I couldn't really hear above the screaming. These women were losing their minds and voices. Like, this was 2001, and they had just been invited up from Times Square to the TRL studio. Jocelyn and I stood there, waiting for the boys to bust into song, or a synchronized dance routine, anything. But nope. After Howie was done with his speech, the boys just kinda danced around the stage aimlessly, mouthing along to whatever pop song was playing over the speakers. They'd take turns walking to the edge of the stage and taking selfies with fans before breaking away to continue lip-syncing along to Usher's Yeah! Or whatever decade-old pop song was being blasted. This went on for half an hour, the entirety of which Jocelyn and I spent being very confused by what we were seeing. It was like a low-energy lip-sync battle between five non-competitive people. Or, thanks to their excessive use of lackadaisical groin thrust, the third shift of a non-union Magic Mike tour. Didn't matter, though. The women were bringing the energy of a bachelorette party, fawning over every tired move and face-palming others out of the way to get their chance for a selfie. A photo with Kevy Kev isn't going to be as easy as we thought, Jocelyn said as we watched a woman attempt a crowd surf to get to the front of the stage. I have faith, I said, but it's not going to be tonight. Maybe later in the cruise when everyone has already gotten selfies with them. Right now, they're hungry for their first kill. We decided to head back to the room, passing through the decorated door gallery on the way. Look who it is, Jocelyn hissed as we stood frozen in front of a door covered in photos. My eyes started darting everywhere. It felt like that scene in A Beautiful Mind when Jennifer Connelly discovers Russell Crowe's secret wall of newspaper clippings and schizophrenic scribbles. There before us was the door of none other than Nick's chick. All of the meet and greet photos from the hashtag were taped up, along with cutout hearts. This girl had photos dating back to the days when AJ would unironically wear a fuzzy leopard print cowboy hat and Howie had shoulder-length hair with a middle part. But we'd seen these photos. That's not what had us standing there, mouths agape. On either side of the door were posters that she had custom made. These were full 24 by 36 inch posters, complete with clouds and hearts surrounding them. It must have cost a fortune at Kinko's. We have to find Kevin's angel and Mysterious, I said, still in shock. We're clearly not going to get close to Kevin, so this is our new mission. We crawled into our tiny beds and drifted off as the boats charged towards Cannes, France, the first stop on the trip. Now, mind you, this was my second time going to Cannes that year, and as someone whose previous beach experiences include almost being arrested at Myrtle Beach for flashing her tits out of the back of a 97 Wrangler, clearly I had arrived. When we arrived, the city was madness because we just so happened to dock during the film festival. Rather than be a part of the paparazzi madness, Jocelyn and I splurged on a guided tour of a 100-year-old perfume factory outside the city. We loaded into a charter bus full of other cruise-goers and started winding up the mountains. It was majestic. Once there, we were ushered through the old factory as a woman with the most exquisite French accent showed us how they would press hundreds and hundreds of jasmine flowers into animal fat to extract the scent. The whole process was fascinating, particularly how hot the dudes were who manned the soap cutting station. They would be models back in the States, but here they were, just humble factory workers who always smelled good. Jesus. Of course, no touristy tour is complete without them trying to gouge you at the gift shop at the end. But this gift shop wasn't cheesy t-shirts and keychains. It was a full-on QVC-level demonstration of all the different scents you could buy. Imagine a group of 20 women, most clad in Backstreet paraphernalia, passing around strips of paper to sniff, nodding their heads and deciding their favorite. It was quite a scene. As I turned to my left to grab a swatch of their signature jasmine scent, I was met face first with Kevin's face. Yeah, not the real one, mind you. A tattoo of Kevin's face. I looked up to meet the smile of a woman who was at least 6'3", rocking overalls, a sleeveless tank top, and a crew cut. Could this be Kevin's angel? I thought to myself. Only one way to find out. I coyly moved to her other side, and sure enough, the other biceps had David Boreanaz circa Buffy plastered across it. I glanced over to Jocelyn, whose face resembled mine during the jalapeno debacle. God bless her. Joss is so sensitive to smells that this was her hell. Her smell hell. She finally looked in my direction as I mouthed, "It's Kevin's angel." "What?" Jocelyn said loudly. I shushed her, which caused our tattooed conquest to look down at me. I smiled at her like a fraggle caught by a gorg. She smiled back and then continued listening to our tour guide, who is now offering package deals. I motioned Jocelyn to come over and pointed at the tat. Her grin spread, and she silently lifted her hand for a high five. Two down, one to go. Back on the ship, it was the Casino Royale-themed party, so we draped our shoulders in our Party City feather boas, only to be met with a cruise ship full of women in floor-length ball gowns. After about 30 minutes of freezing out on the deck and watching the guys be 12 people deep for selfies in their Bond-style tuxes, we called it a night. The dream of meeting the boys was becoming more and more futile. In the world of Bond, we were feeling like the two zeros in 007. The next day, we docked in Italy. Jocelyn and I decided to forego a planned trip with a bunch of people trying to sell us stuff and ventured out on our own instead. We knew that Pisa was only an hour's train ride away, so we figured we'd head there for lunch. Easy enough, right? Wrong. The town we docked in had no Ubers or cabs, so we walked 3 miles to the train station. By the time we made it to take the iconic picture in front of the Leaning Tower, I was such a hangry bitch that I almost just knocked the tower over with the sheer force of my mind. But we got that pic, which is included if you'd like to see. Aren't I an adorable generic tourist? It had taken so long to get there that by the time we snapped a few photos and made fun of everyone else doing the exact same thing because it was somehow dumber when they did it, we only had time to grab a quick lunch before heading back. Guys, I am not exaggerating when I say we ate the most delicious pasta of our lives during this quick trip. I knew the pasta would probably be better because we were in Italy, and maybe it was a combination of the surroundings and the fact that we had been eating cruise ship food for 3 days, but this bucatini with fried sage and a creamy sauce that I'm assuming was made out of reduced angel tears was one of the best meals I've ever had. It was wrong to leave something we had just found that gave us such pleasure. It was like finding the one person who could make you reach orgasm, and then they jump off a cliff. I wanted to move to Italy just to be with this pasta. I wanted to become the first woman on Earth to marry a plate of food. But alas, we still had one box left unchecked on our mission. We needed to find Miss Tyrius. Sure, we'd only seen pictures of her with her face modified, but that wasn't going to stop us. So I definitely picked up and licked the plate with zero shame, and we headed back to the boat. I left a piece of my heart in Italy that day. That evening's party brought us a night at the cinema. But rather than waste a free hand that could be better used to double fist, we left our fake Oscars in the room and headed to the deck in our normal clothes. Everyone else had really brought their A-game that night. There were Marilyn Monroe's, Chucky and his bride, Beetlejuice, Superwoman. It looked like a convention for knockoff characters from Times Square, if everyone was there to make their ex jealous. And yes, I do mean even that Chucky doll costume was a little bit slutty. We slammed a few drinks out of the gate to warm us up, or as I prefer to term it, we put on our liquor ponchos. The boys came out and did their lip-syncing and selfie routine again as Joss and I stood there. observing a minion bent over and backed up on a fellow minion like they were recreating Rihanna's work video. You know, it's a bummer, I said to Jocelyn as I watched a Shrek and Donkey grind. That we'll never eat that pasta again? Yes, to that. But also, that it's been so goddamn cold that we haven't even gotten in the pool once. I looked over to the empty pool and hot tub. Fuck it. Let's get in the...